Welcome, everyone. Here we are. Tell us where we are, Lena.
We're in my apartment in Victoria.
Yeah, we're in Victoria, British Columbia. This is so exciting. This is Andrew Jacooper, and we're here with Nicholas Gulich as well. We're just going to go around the circle. We're going to introduce ourselves. But before that, I'll tell you the premise. Chimera Theatre is doing a podcast with Damspot Theatre. We met them at the Victoria Fringe Festival, and their show, The Weird Sisters, was amazing. So amazing that we wanted to talk to them about it and help them promote it and just kind of pick their brains because it was a really cool project. So let's go over here. We'll start with you. And tell us who you are and what you did with the show.
Exactly,
I'm Carl Keyes, and I'm the composer and the sound designer for the piece.
That's it.
Hello,
internet. My name is Nicola Whitney Griffiths, and I choreographed The Weird Sisters.
And my name is Elena Block, and I'm the founder of Damspot Theatre and the director, producer, adapter, and sometimes stage manager of The Weird Sisters.
Great. Okay, so Nick is going to lead the conversation at the beginning. He's got a couple of questions, and then once he's done with all his questions, I'll get into some nitty-gritty stuff about the show specifically.
Yeah, the kind of questions that I have, like, they start off with just some basic, like, who you are, where did you study, and, like,
what's
how long have you been?
Color?
Yeah.
We just want to know about you guys, especially because no one knows who you are in Kamloops, most likely. Our audience base doesn't know who you guys are,
So, Elena, if you want to just start off by talking a little bit about Damspot, you know,
sure.
A little bit about that, origins about some Damspot, or some origins about Weird Sisters, if you like.
Yeah, Damspot Theatre started when I submitted this show for Fringe with the lovely name your company section, and kind of 10 o'clock at night kind of came up with the title on the fly. But the company itself is all about revising Shakespeare for 21st century audiences, which is something that I've always connected to and have been wanting to do. I wrote a production in grade 10 where I took Shakespeare's leading ladies and plopped them in a Greenwich Village salon in modern-day New York City and had them talking about life and love to a very boisterous Julie who runs into the salon going, I'm getting married. And that's kind of where the whole, like, bringing Shakespeare in for new audiences started. The Weird Sisters, the idea actually started in when I did the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts Acting Shakespeare program in London, England 2 summers ago, where Nona Shepherd, who is a director in the program, did a production of Macbeth, where she triple casted the leads. And so she had one actor play pre-Duncan Macbeth, one King Macbeth, and one The Fall of Macbeth. And the Lady M's kind of pretty much followed the same rise and fall. And the Weird Sisters also played roles like Ross Lennox and Donald Bain, some of the smaller roles. And that got me thinking about other ways to do the show with casts. And the Weird Sisters was kind of born.
That's awesome.
From that, yeah.
For anyone who doesn't know, do you want to talk a little bit about Weird Sisters, like the basic premise of it?
Yeah. Basically, the idea is I've taken several accounts in Shakespeare where supernatural magic and mischief is performed or done, and have it as if it's done by the Weird Sisters in Macbeth. So the Weird Sisters toy with Hamlet as Hamlet's ghost. They become Puck and toy with Demetrius and Lysander. They are the Tempest Storm, and that's how we open the show. And these scenes are also intertwined with the famous scenes from Macbeth that the witches do. So basically it's kind of playing with our own notions of what the witches do, but also going back to kind of like the Wiccan original medieval witches and kind of their role in sorcery, but also connecting that to the kind of the creation of Shakespeare's witches and the kind of theatricality behind that. And I knew that the best way that I wanted to explore that was through dance, because I knew that the kind of putting my thesis of how can all these plays all be put together, the easiest way was through the body, and that's where I brought in Nicola, and that's where I brought in Carl.
Wow. Now that you mention you two, do you guys want to talk about your roles as well, and sort of the process about working with the Weird Sisters. And
yeah. I'll go.
Sure.
Because mine and Carl's processes were so integrally linked, that'll be good. Basically, Alana asked me, like, in the middle of our last year at UVic, hey, do you want to choreograph this big project thing? Yes. I have no idea what's going on, but yes, I do. Because I came from a background of only ever choreographing myself and, like, one music video that I got paid $300 for.
There you go.
But basically, for me, dancing was so awesome because it does link all of the stories together very easily because it's all, you know, integrally, like, through the body and very, like, physical. Thank you, Shakespeare. You know, it was such a physical kind of theater that it was super easy to connect all those plots. And we were also working on, like, the theatricality of the witches. So just the idea that magic controls the plot of a play in, like, sort of our Western idea of how theatricality and, like, plot works. You know, sometimes things just happen.
Yeah.
And we were working with the idea that maybe, you know, this magic is sort of how people do this inherent theatricality. I don't know, it's a very vague roundabout thing that we're working with. But basically, I attempted to make the show as much like Cirque du Soleil as I could without actually having any gymnastics experience, because I thought that would be a fun challenge for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So me and Alana sat down together, and we picked the most successful plots in Shakespeare where we were like, this is really like inherently magic controlling the plot, not any character decisions, just like this happens because magic, which was a fun thing to find. And we kind of just, we looked for those groups of three originally because we really wanted to work in here.
Yeah, my huge thing, I told all the designers, Michelle as well, our costume designer, and I told this to these two, is that one of the most important lines that the Weird Sisters have in the play is thrice to thine and thrice to mine and thrice again to make of nine piece the charms wound up.
Right.
And nine is a really powerful number, especially in Wiccan history.
Mm-hmm.
And I really wanted, because we had a cast of six, I wanted to find a way to make up for the missing three.
Mm-hmm.
So we had that in music, we had that in the costumes,
mm-hmm.
and for Nicola, it was figuring out how to put it in the choreography.
Yeah, which
mm-hmm.
was fun. So we ended up with sort of three groups of three in the structure of the piece, and I gave each witch their own specific sort of like solo piece to work with, and then that was broken up by three different scenes where we're all together, and then three other scenes that were a little less us and a little more about the boys, so that we created this like sort of like arc and flow of three and three in the piece, which was fun.
That's
and
awesome.
Then we just found a lot of our friends from UVic, and we auditioned people who we thought were, I was like, can these people pick people up? Because I was like, I want everyone in this cast to be able to pick each other up, which is hilarious, because every night we get oohs and ahs at girls picking up boys. I'm like, you gotta calm down. Girls are so strong.
Yeah.
And then the choreography was very, very devised. I like being called the choreographer because it makes me feel special, but like, really, I was sort of the choreographer, devising director. I would let the cast, Alana would give me a whole like narrative structure to work with, and I would say, okay, this is sort of the structure of the dance I would like, but really I let the dancers and actors create that structure, and then I would just sort of like specify and hone what they naturally did, because what I wanted to not do, what I was so scared of doing, is choreographing over someone's natural dance style.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just let them go at it, and I said, do that, not this, do that, but like over here, do that, but like with more people in it.
Yeah.
And that's how we created something, I think, that was very like natural in its flow of movement, which I'm very proud of, because I was scared of, you know, making it just like a dance core, everybody do this and this and this sort of deal.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And then me and Carl worked very intrinsically together with Alana giving us sort of a big overarching feeling of what it should be like, and then me saying, like in the beginning we were like, the tempest happens from the tempest, and we're like, well, what if the witches are the boat, and then they create the storm, and then they break the boat and make everyone go into the ocean. So we were like, Carl, we need oceany boat music. and then he went from there.
Yeah,
and that works really great for my process. A lot of what I enjoy doing when I'm producing music is doing a lot of found sound work, so like going out in the world and finding random sounds and recording them and putting them into the music. And especially with Shakespeare, there's a lot of imagery, especially with the parts that were chosen for this adaptation. And it was really interesting going into kind of the mood of the piece and finding sounds that are not just danceable but are also evoking a particular image. And found sounds can be really useful for like tying a piece together and making it kind of relatable in that way. That was a big part of what I was trying to do, like Nikki's talking about the flow of movement. Well, there was also a really big effort to make the music flow as a whole, as if it was a set of dance music that could be like DJ'd or something.
Totally.
Yeah. I feel like I'm getting a lot of credit. People come up to me and say, oh, the choreography was like fantastic, but I think I'm getting a lot of credit from like Carl and I and Elena all together, because it's the emotional content from all those pieces coming together to make people feel things. And I'm like, well, I just did a handstand, like, but I was doing a handstand while the music was creating this emotional feeling, and you know,
and that there was a context tying everything together. The process of producing music for me has never been context based. I'll be looking for a particular beat or a particular rhythm that I want to try out, or even just a particular sound. But in this instance, it was completely, and same with the choreography, of course, like the way that it comes out, it's totally based on the context of the scene, and that creates a very different process for those roots.
It's really not just a dance piece to music. It's so much more, like we were calling it collective movement theater.
It had a very different energy than just like a dance piece.
The length that we can go to using movement and sound as plot elements and as like characters is pretty, you can really push that envelope in a lot of ways, and it creates a very different piece of theater. It's really nice.
And they're interesting elements. They're like amazing tools to use to tell a story too, right? Like I noticed that when I watched the show, each scene had a very different feel than the last one. You could tell when one scene ended and when another. Because it was very like, you know, one that moment would end and then the next one would continue on with a different musical piece or a different style.
Yeah, the music was so useful for that, because the dancing ones, I was like, how do you tell when one scene is ending, one narrative is ending, and the other is starting? Like, that was going to be so difficult. So the music fixed that.
That was definitely a big game for both of us, I think, was how do you create this continuity while also creating enough variation that it's like engaging.
Plus you have the Weird Sisters were on stage for the whole piece, right? Like the whole entire show they were on stage, right?
They have two short exits and I have one short exit,
right? But it's a lot about using the music and using the movement to make it really clear what those shifts are for the audience.
I think at the very last rehearsal we had not finished choreographing it by the last rehearsal, essentially, and we had the scenes, like in the very beginning of the piece, we have scenes that are very similar and like the music is very connected, and we were like, how are we going to change the narrative? So all we did was we walk across the stage, we do this like big sweeping movement, we were like, now the scene is changing,
and it's done.
And it's amazing how people get that, like how seeing the audience watch a physical movement piece is so cool, because people just get it. Like, they just instantly, they're like, okay, that's done, a new thing. And, like, people ooh and ah and clap and gasp and laugh so much more than in, like, traditional, like, straight talking theater. Yeah, it's an amazing feeling to get that reaction.
Yeah.
I feel like it's a lot more like the reaction you would have seen in original Shakespeare audiences, like that sort of freeness of expressing your reaction to the show,
which
is so in line with what we want to be doing with Shakespeare, is like bring it back, bring it back to the way people would have experienced it, but in a way that is relevant to the audiences now.
That's awesome.
That's great. Why don't we just quickly, I'd like to just talk with each of you again just a little bit about like your history, like how you got into producing music, how you got into choreographing or leading choreography, and like where you got your training, and we'll do that, and then we can dive into some of these specific things.
Written down here,
Yeah. Why don't we go in reverse order? Mm-hmm. We can talk to our music producer first.
For sure. So I, as I was going into university, I was also had a huge passion for dance music and rave culture, specifically the West Coast based music scene. And Victoria has a really amazing community of people. It's small enough that you can recognize people when you go out to the particular shows, but big enough that there's like diverse things happening, and it's very connected to a lot of things that are happening over in Vancouver, and has been a huge source of inspiration for me. And I mean, just little things, like you continually meet people who will introduce new things in the way that you're doing things. I mean, my current roommate got me into producing music about 3 years ago. Around that same time, I got into finding Found Sounds and like that sort of process with a good friend of mine, Tony Hall, who runs a stage building practice here in Victoria now, called EMP Interactions, and we would do a lot of found sound finding, like, yeah, in the early days. We just have like hours and hours of recorded sounds that are just like,
so what would that be like? You just go out in a park and like record birds or something?
Yeah, whatever shakes your fancy. I mean, you can do things like that was just a can going, or in the, like in Hamlet, I use that as a snare there's a can.
Okay, what? Yeah, I have to ask you a question later about one sound, because I put a glass down at a restaurant the other day and it made like a, and I swear to God that's the beginning of scene 2.
Probably.
Might be scene 2.
It was like,
yeah, we can check.
I swear to God that's a glass being put down on a table.
But they're throughout the whole piece has sounds like that. I mean, like, it's such a fun way to create music. And it's been a huge part of my process ever since.
That's cool.
Basically.
Yeah. It was very, like, one thing I noticed is that it was completely, like, it's not like a generic, like, snare sound that you would hear, like, you know, on your default program or whatever. It's like, it's something that you had gone out and found, and that's, like, that's what makes it so. That's what made your sound like so unique, right?
Cool. I really appreciate that. I try really hard, even if I am using a typical kick or a typical snare, which does happen a lot. I try and be specific about the ones that I'm choosing. Like, they have to work together, even if they're coming from random places and stuff.
I actually talked to Janet Lecuvée, she's a local reviewer in Victoria, and she told me, because she's coming from like sort of an older audience, and she was like, she went and saw another Dance Friend show, and she said she couldn't handle it because the music was this like modern music, but she found that because ours was very found sound, it was much easier to connect with as an older audience, and I found that so awesome. Cool.
That's really good to hear, because I mean, it's coming from a very particular culture and place that's generally very young oriented. My mom's coming to see this, and anytime I've tried to show her this sort of music before, it's very much a that's not something I want to be listening to.
Electronic music, right?
Yeah, exactly.
That's very young.
Mm-hmm. And I'm a huge fan of drum and bass, which is probably the most abrasive of any of these pieces. But that's really cool to hear, actually. And
do you have some other examples of like what you use? Like you said, the can. You said.
Yeah, I paint houses for work in town, so I found a lot of like rope or like banging on paint cans. There was one really rainy day where I just sat under a, like, you know, you can detach Jeep roofs, and like the scene 2 coming out of the scene 2 dance is just me sitting under this rain, like this rainy roof, just like
maybe a little microphone.
Exactly.
We were doing voice recordings for the voiceover, and we were sitting there, like right now, you're just like listening to the tea scoop.
Yeah, I want to see if there's enough to make a. Yeah, that's in.
I use that's a cool stuff.
You'll get it.
Recording voices, and you were like, "Everyone, shut up!" You sat in the chair, and you started making the squeaking noise of the chair for like a minute. And you're like, "Can we talk now?"
Do you record on your phone, or do you have a device?
No, I've been renting one for the duration of the piece, which has been amazing. I can't.
That's fantastic. We should talk hardware. Like, what microphones are you using?
I've been using the Zoom H4N. We've been renting it from Long & McQuaid, and it's been great. It can do 4-channel. I just use the stereo, of course. You need some extra runs from it, but it's been really, really useful. We do all of our voiceovers, all of everything with that, and it's been
fantastic. That's
but realistically, for sound, found sound work, like, I mean, depending on what you're wanting to be doing, like, it doesn't need to be a good recording. Sometimes having a shitty recording of something can be really useful, actually. It can lend a particular quality, you know?
Whatever you're going for, yeah.
Yeah.
It's awesome.
That's great. Before we move over back to our choreographer, we have someone else here. Say hello.
Hello. Sorry, it took me a while to find the door. That's what I meant. It's not like I didn't know what number to buzz. I don't know where the front door is. I was like, around the back. I'm like, this gate doesn't look like it has a code to it.
This is like the oldest part of Victoria, so all the streets are like squiggles.
Yeah. It's so cool, though.
There's a lot of churches out here, too.
By the way, it's Brooke that's joining us.
Right, it's Brooke Mallow.
General Director of Multimedia.
Here he is.
Typical host of the podcast, all that jazz.
Yeah, he's here. Great. All right, let's chat a little bit about your background in dance and collective movement theater.
47 years ago. Just kidding.
You're looking great for your age.
For about 100.
Yeah. So I did not have any dance experience until I was 14, and I was just sort of a chubby little boring kid. And then I joined an RAD, a Royal Academy of Dance studio, in my hometown, just like half an hour from here, and I took modern and ballet, and that sort of sparked my interest in everything performative. So then I joined acting in high school, and then I went to acting school, and then I decided that I loved movement class, even though our movement teacher was nuts. Mm-hmm. Hi, Conrad.
Oh.
I love him. But anyway, so yeah, I just realized I had this huge passion for physical theater and choreography and movement and movement-based performance. So I focused really hard on choreographing myself in a lot of different avenues, and Alana saw that because we were in the same class, and she decided that she wanted to challenge me and have me choreograph 5 other people, which I had never done before, which was an incredibly difficult experience, but very, 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 you know, a great way to learn about how to communicate. And what else? What is my training? I got my acting degree at the Phoenix Theater at UVic, just like Alana did.
Is that BFA program?
Yes, yes,
cool.
It is.
Okay.
Yeah, Bachelor's of Fine Arts in Theater, specializing in acting. It's mostly acting for the stage. We have a thrust and a proscenium, but we also do a few little TV and film classes.
Cool.
That's awesome. And what else?
Beautiful campus, by the way.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah, we checked it out. We were
really
it's a really nice space, and you guys have more than one theater, which is great.
Yeah.
At Frontier U, we have a little black box.
Very cool.
Oh, really?
Which works, it's very versatile.
I mean,
but
technically we have the clock tower too, but that's
I don't think that's in
that's
the theater
good for
program
like PowerPoint presentations and pretty much nothing else.
Yeah, we're really lucky. We have the thrust. The Dan George Theater and also the proscenium, the Bishop.
Wow, cool.
And our rehearsal spaces are huge. Victoria's really lucky. And also it's just like bring your own venue spaces for the Victoria Fringe. Like there's so many amazing places to do theater outside.
Mm-hmm.
I guess I have dance experience in the Fringe. The last 2 years, I completely forget what I do all the time. The last 2 years of Fringe, I've done interpretive dance pieces as well, so this is sort of like apparently my focus.
Yeah, you're three of Fringe.
Yeah, exactly. This is my third Fringe show.
Sweet.
When I was in my second year at UVic, I did a piece with Andrew Barrett, who is a pretty well-known interpretive dance guy here, and I was in his Fringe show. And then 2 years ago, Levi Schneider, who was also in our show, he cast me in his dance show called Can We Fly, and we did that in a bring your own venue. We did that in a tidal zone in a Esquimalt off of a bridge because we're idiots.
And nobody checked the tide times.
So Levi Schneider is from Saskatchewan, so he did not understand that a tide is at different levels on different days. So I was like, Levi, did you check the tide schedules before you did our like times? He was like, oh no, I just put them all at 7 p.m. because that would be easy. And I said, you're an idiot. So on the first day of our performance, the audience was on a bridge, and
mm-hmm.
we would be like underneath the bridge in this tidal area by a forest.
That's really cool.
It was really cool. Our audiences were like 12 people because it was in the middle of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and we were not good at marketing like Alana is. So the first day we were in this tidal zone, and it was all rock and sand, and it was brutal.
Man.
And then by the last day we were in a foot of water dancing around in the rain.
Oh my lord.
So this is such a clean, organized experience comparatively, but so I do have I guess, quite a bit of a sort of interpretive dance and choreography experience. I just didn't remember.
There you go. You're very experienced.
Yeah.
All right, and back to Alana, the fearless leader
of
the group.
Oh, goodness.
Let's talk a little bit about you.
Well, for directing, that's something I didn't really get into until 2 years ago. Well, I dabbled in high school, but like more of like a focus was about 2 years ago. But acting I've been doing since I was 4, where a maniac drama teacher thought it'd be a wonderful idea to put 4-year-olds in a production of Macbeth, where I played Lady Macduff and got to dramatically die on stage.
Oh, I thought you were going to play the children who get murdered.
Oh.
I was like, what role would you play?
No.
Like,
all of them. We were the production.
That's a heavy show.
Yeah.
Oh, great.
Toddy Macbeth, basically. So yeah, that was fun, and didn't deter me from theater, so I kind of stuck with it for a while. Juggled a lot of different productions throughout high school. Dabbled in high school with directing. I was the director of the junior drama club for 4 years. So I directed the small children from grades 1 through 6 in the larger cast productions of the school's shows. So when I was in grade 11, we did Peter Pan, and I played Captain Hook, and all the little children played the Lost Boys.
Oh my lord!
Which was freaking adorable.
So cute.
When I was in grade 12, we did Anne of Green Gables, and I was Anne Shirley, and the children played the school children.
Mm.
So, like, I was wearing a lot of hats in that production.
Yeah,
and
a wig.
Yeah, and a wig. Lots of hats and a wig.
Awesome.
Got to university, got into the acting program at UVic, and then in third year, during the summer before third year, I went off to the Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts for their program, and basically reaffirmed my love for Shakespeare. And that year we did nothing but Shakespeare in all of our acting and voice and movement classes, to the point where I had thought I had seen enough of him for a while, and then this idea happened, and apparently we're back together.
Mm-hmm.
I broke up for a while,
and now we're fine. It was also in third year where I was taking a directing class at school, and that was kind of when I realized that I'm not just an actor, but I kind of am a theater artist, and I like doing all the things. So I guess this whole production for The Weird Sisters has been a test for myself of how many hats can I wear without wanting to not do theater anymore. How many hats is too many? But I really have found a love for directing through this process, and definitely a love for movement theater, because I do not have the dance training to do what Nikki has done, but I feel like because we've been in so many classes over the years, we basically share a brain with some things artistically, so, which is really helpful.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Perfect.
That's great.
I'm going to some of your questions later if you want to.
Yeah.
I'm not sure I mentioned how I know these two.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, please.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I read on Craigslist.
We need a sound designer.
I got kind of sidetracked by
this. With your mic on the side of the road.
You're just collecting sounds, and you came across them on the streets like, wow, that's an interesting sound. Like, let me record you walking.
You guys
sound
have such
money.
Cool voices.
Yeah. So how do you know them?
I was a year ahead of them in the theater department. I took... my specialization was design, so set lighting and costume design, and then I met them through that program as well. I think we're all UVic Phoenixers in the production.
Actually, everyone involved in the making of The Weird Sisters is either an alumni or a current student of the
theater
department.
Yeah.
UVic.
Yeah. It's the same
that's
with
not
Chimera
of
right now. Yeah, everyone in Chimera
went to UVic.
What? No. We didn't know each other until now.
TRU. Yeah, we're all from TRU, which that's how you get to know other theater artists.
TRU?
Yeah. TRU is Thompson Rivers University.
Oh, I was like, is that a small town in
True.
It's a pretty small town inside of Camden.
Yeah.
It's a pretty fantastic way to get to know how people are as artists.
Yeah, exactly.
What you can do with them. That was totally how you guys knew what I could do. And then
you did a SATCO, which is a UVic student alternative theater company. You did a show when we were in our third year. Called Beyond the Clouds. I remember it because it was beautiful, and Colette Hebel danced in it, and you original sound designed it in the exact same way that we did this Weird Sisters.
There wasn't original music
that
time. I hadn't produced the music that time. Tony and I jointly looked, we scoured for about 150 songs for the right ones. But same yeah, sound process. Design. Yeah, just it was sound design. And it was the same thought process, especially in the way that you guys like, there's a lot of similarity in the way that the choreography happened, which is totally devised. I'm not a choreographer either. Like, I was like, you guys move wonderfully, so do those kinds of movements that you do to this music.
Always dancing with Colette Bell is always just, she's like, let me move around and say yes to things. I'm like, beautiful. Perfect.
Yeah, she's a very, very...
Sounds really fun.
Yeah, it's really sweet. Fun.
Cool. Before we all leave, I'd like to just go around and we're each going to just say our favorite part of this show. So three of us only saw it. So we're going to be like, I really like this thing. But you guys can say like this specific dance thing or piece of music that you really liked, or maybe you have a specific part directing it. And we'll just be like, this is a cool thing that I liked seeing or working on or creating or whatever it is. And we'll just do that. And since I brought the topic up, I will let you all think about it, and I'll tell you mine first. Alana and I actually already spoke about this, but my favorite part of the show from an audience's point of view was during one of the Macbeth scenes, the three witches were there, and they're all scouring their hands as if they were washing off the blood. And it wasn't in the dialogue. They weren't saying anything, but it had the whole, like, out spot kind of feel to it, and they were, like, rubbing their hands, and it had a very like Lady McBee kind of feel to it.
Was it at the very end?
Yeah. It was very close to the end. Exactly. And and then there was this other part where they were like with their hands, it made it seem like blood was running down their legs. And I was like, oh, miscarriage. And one of my favorite things about theater, particularly for myself, because I'm also a choreographer, is nonverbal storytelling. And that was like super clear nonverbal storytelling. And I feel like the average theater goer, I'm also a huge fan of Shakespeare and Macbeth particularly. I think the average theater goer would have been like, oh, that looks cool. But for me, I was just like, wow, that's so good. It was like very clear, and they were all really into it. And it was like commentary, because not like it's like it had a specific decision made about it. Not every production of Macbeth is like literal about like washing hands and miscarriage and that kind of thing. So it was nice to see like a director's point of view and that being created.
Oh my gosh,
I really liked it.
So exciting for me to hear.
Yeah, I loved it.
Some scenes we were like, I don't know what to choreograph. Let's literally just choreograph the story of that play.
Yes, that's what worked. It's just storytelling.
Macbeth and Hamlet, we were like, what happens in these plays?
And
Midsommar is also very clear. That one, I was like, oh, I get everything that's happening. Like, before anything was spoken, I was like, I know this is Midsommar.
Yeah. So you just get it. Specifically for Macbeth, we were like, what's like three or four like huge plot points in Macbeth? Mm-hmm. And I was like, and then we just like took sections, like stanzas of the music, and did those plot points. And
yeah,
like, this is
it works. Yeah, it really works.
Oh, that makes me feel so much better.
That's great. Yeah, that was my favorite. And it was simple. Like, there are some things that are, like, some of the really big lifts and some of the, like women as bases I loved. You were talking about, like, oh my god, like, a girl's lifting a guy. I also love that when women base for men.
Yeah.
Some of the really great big group stuff when you throw... His name is
Nicky.
His name is also Nick, right?
I know, right?
Yeah, when you throw him up right at the beginning of The Tempest, like, those kind of things were great, but it was this little simple moment, for some reason, for me, I was like, that was...
Nice.
In my opinion, it was the most striking moment.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we go this way? We haven't even heard from you yet.
Well, I mean, we heard my story about not being able to enter the apartment. Okay, well, I don't really have a background in movement, so I don't feel comfortable commenting on that. Honestly, all I can say is, oh my god, they were moving. Your physicality is very impressive. So, I was very impressed by that. What I like in storytelling is differing perspectives. So... For example, The Lion King 1.5.
Oh, good
where,
example.
Yeah.
Possibly a better example is Rosencrantz and Guildenstern are Dead.
Yeah.
Where it's your scene.
It's the same thing.
It's both
a great Lion King 1.5 is an adaptation of that. Just like Hamlet is Lion King 1 and Romeo and Juliet is Lion King 2.
But where it's, you're seeing a different side of the story.
Wait, Romeo and Juliet is Lion King 2?
Yeah. And Rosencrantz and Guildenstern. Yeah, anyways, sorry. Go on.
No, I mean, I like sparking conversation. So I like that aspect of it, that just seeing them go through all the different Shakespeare stories and the effect they had on it, even if you didn't see them as the witches in that particular show.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was really, really cool. Really well done.
Yeah. My favorite bit, the bit that stuck with me the most was actually the very opening, the opening sequence of The Tempest and like the storms, and like I really felt this, like the sounds, everything, like as we were talking about earlier, like everything just came together and it was all just like, it was super clear in my mind, like, what was going on, and the witches were amazing, like, in that part too, and the guys getting tossed around and stuff, and man, it was just like a, it was such a cool piece to open with, I think was a really strong choice as well.
Yes, so, yeah. Stroke my ego.
Oh, yes.
Let's hear from the inside then.
Let's hear from the inside what you guys think. What's your favorite part?
What was your favorite piece to, like, contribute to, or what was maybe, I guess, or what might have been the most challenging part?
Oh, I know.
Yeah.
the most exciting point for me was getting to choreograph something I was not in, because that was extremely challenging, being in all the pieces and also having to, you know, be objectively looking at everyone else doing their choreography. So there was a moment in rehearsal where we had to be like, oh, am I the choreographer or the dancer now? Like, what's going on? But getting to choreograph Colette Habel and Levi Schneider doing the Joan de Puisel scene was very, very satisfying, because I could take that objective looking at them point of view, and also they are just beautiful movers together, and they really fill each other's negative space, and they really support each other. So we just let them improv to the music 2 or 3 times, I think, and then we just started structuring what they had improvised, which was so satisfying.
Such a sexy scene.
Such a sexy scene. Carl's music, he showed me the music, and I was what the hell is this?
We were, like, on our way to a meeting at Carl's place, and Nicola was like, I have no idea what to do for the pas de deux. I'm freaking out. Because originally that scene was actually going to be on point. Like,
Wow.
We were Colette was going to be on point juice.
Yeah, Colette and
scene.
I
yeah.
both
that
had lots of point
yeah.
experience,
yeah.
and we were going to be like, let's use the point to create a very delicate atmosphere of some of these scenes. Mm-hmm. Then we decided that was crazy, because
strapping
scene,
those on mid-show would have been nuts.
Exactly.
Yeah,
we were like,
out.
no, because we started point, you know, strengthening exercises, and we're like, we both have not done this in 2 years, so let's not.
No, but we went to Carl's, and then Carl played the music, and both of us, our jaws just dropped, and we were like, this is,
I was like, we were walking
perfect.
Around, I was like, maybe, like, I don't know, like, little twinkly noises, something, like, very light and, like, ballet-y, and then he put on this, like, jazz saxophone, and I was like, yes! So flawless. And then the most challenging, oh, I had it, that was definitely the nicest, and then the most challenging thing for me was, I guess, being the choreographer, but also a dancer.
Yes.
And I think I ended up, stage blocking-wise, a lot in the middle, because I needed everyone around me. Like, it just sort of, I was like, oops, I made myself on stage the longest, and also in the middle of all the scenes, because I had to have a bird's eye view of what everyone else was doing while I was dancing. And there was, like, probably the last rehearsal we were in, or maybe even, it was probably as late as tech dress, where I was like, okay, I can stop looking at everybody else while I dance and just dance, which was a very satisfying experience. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was pretty much the most challenging thing I've ever done theatrically, because of, you know, participating and also having to be objective.
Mm-hmm.
That was very difficult.
You gotta wear a lot of different hats.
That's
yeah.
great.
Yeah,
that's a lot of hats.
What about from sound point of view?
I think for me, my favorite part was kind of inventing this process with these guys, basically. I'm a huge fan of rave culture, obviously. Like, I've always felt that theater is secondary for me as an interest. Like, I'm very, very passionate about that. But they go together so well that I'm constantly trying to find ways to fuse the two. I mean, I was telling these guys that for me, raving is the same thing as theater, except that every person at a rave is both audience and actor.
So cool.
It really generates this atmosphere of participation and stuff. And you go to a rave for the same reason. It's a togetherness thing. You go with a group of people to experience something. And so the whole time I was reflecting on what you might do for a set of music while doing this process. And then there was also this added element of music production. You obviously can collaborate with people, but it most of the time is a very insulated thing. Like, I'm sitting in my room listening to the same loops of music over and over and over again by myself. Like, my whole process was in my bedroom at my desk, right? And so to have this back and forth where I would send off what I was doing, every time I finished a session, I would send it over them. They would talk about it. We would discuss what they were looking for. And then developing pieces that way was really informative as for me as a music producer. Now I'm coming back to my own practice at that, and having all these new tangents to explore based on that. So I think
that's what I'm really excited to have gotten out of this piece. And I think my favorite thing about the piece as a thing is related, and that was having people spend months like interpreting music that I've made in this really beautiful, like, really, like, image-based dance form, yeah. And that has been, like, very, very exciting.
Yeah, were filming the dance pieces because I needed to see them, like, from an objective point of view, but Carl was like, I'm not gonna watch them. I'm gonna ruin it for myself.
I watched one of them, and I was like, no, you know what, I'm gonna... Because there's only so much that I could do. Like, I was making changes still to music at that point based on what they needed choreography, but it was what you guys were asking for, not what I was deciding needed to happen based on seeing it. So I was like, I'm just not gonna watch. It'll just be so much more enjoyable to see the thing. And it totally was. That was way worth it.
That's great. Mm-hmm. Here we are.
Man.
Back to Lana.
Oh, I think, well, my own personal favorite part, I guess, to work on in the show was the silent scene, just because that was the one scene that I had the most input in with, because it's interesting with a piece that's so dance-based. It was really me communicating to these guys what I wanted and what my vision is, but at a certain point I have to just let them do what they do, because that's why I brought them onto the project.
Yeah, it was a lot of yesing and no.
Yeah, but scene 10 was really like my baby of a scene, because I wanted that we call it the curse scene, to really stand on its own 2 feet, and that is kind of the most pivotal moment, is you really see how the witches are toying with the men. There's no soundtrack, because Carl and I first sat down, we were talking about silence as a sound at one point, so we chose that scene, and I really wanted the movements to be very simple, very pedestrian, and it kind of just grew. And it was also the scene that I was most excited when I was writing the script about, because it's like, there's like 5 different Shakespeare scenes that happen between scene 8 and 9 and 10. Like, you have the dance break of scene 8, Tisir Tis Gone, which has like 4 different plays in it, and then you have the Hamlet scene, the big Hamlet scene, and then you have this giant curse scene that has lines from Henry VI Part 1 in it, and it has lines from Macbeth in there, and it's got some Hamlet in there.
It's confusing for people who don't know
this.
If they haven't seen it, yeah.
It's just one of those scenes where it was my baby. It was my baby scene, so I was really stoked about that. But challenging, I guess, the whole thing. No, I've actually just found this experience to be quite amazing. Like, it's been really amazing to get to work with these incredible, incredible people. Like, Nicola and I have gotten to know each other a lot better throughout this process. Same with Carl and I. Like, I literally just, I think, Facebook messaged you out of the blue one day and was like, hey, how would you like to sound design 9 new pieces for a Fringe show?
It was at the Phoenix, like, finals.
Final, yeah.
It was my first time showing up at the Phoenix after graduating the year before. I, like, go to see the final projects, and Alana was like, oh my god, I've been actually meaning to talk to you.
I just threw it at you. It was probably, like, 13 sound designs, because we cut it down quite a bit.
Yeah, because originally the show was going to be 45 minutes, and we cut down to 37, so it got smaller as it went along, which was really great.
Like, I can't dance anymore.
Yeah. There were some great moments where there was just
too much music.
Right.
Oh! We were like, we need a 2-minute scene. He was like, okay, here's four minutes of music.
I'm at this final step in the process where we've decided we're gonna put out an album of the tunes, and that means I get to go back and, like, now that I really enjoyed the process of, like, cutting down my songs so that they worked for the choreography, but there's also, I mean, like, and any designer in any aspect of design feels this at some point in the process, like, you have to make it work for the show, and that means reining it in a bit. So it's nice to have this bit of catharsis at the end where I could, like, go the full length and, like, actually
the director's cut.
That's exactly what it is.
The real thing, because the designer's cut.
We had, like, one tiny, it wasn't a fight, but it was just a little artistic dispute where, like, we're like, Carl, we don't need this much music at the end, like, please cut it down. And he was like, no, I really don't want to. And I was like, you dance for the last minute of this.
Rude. Ooh, I had a little bit of, wait, I really like this part. No.
What I liked, I want to chime in something about the sound that I really liked as well. I liked how in each of the sound pieces, like, there was something
characteristic about that musical piece that was that like reflected what was happening on stage. Like one example that is clear in my head was when like the witches were brewing like this big, like they had this big cauldron in front of them. I don't know, that's just why I pictured it, but like you had and like in
was.
The sound, like there was bubbling going on, and like there was like, you know, witchy sounds. It was
my roommate comes home one day and they see me at the stove just boiling two different sized pots of water.
Yeah,
like I spent awesome. Like 20 minutes. Yeah, I'm like, yeah. Goo, yeah, let's bubble this.
Yeah. Yeah. Sound designers are a very interesting race.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, every time you hear one of those sounds, there's definitely an image of me with the microphone doing some kind of weird.
I see the show and then like know that in the back of my head.
Like under a bridge, sitting in your Jeep.
Totally,
all kinds
yeah.
of things.
It was different, like,
yeah, no, great. that was, and that's totally that. It was really interesting to think of sounds as these images and
yeah.
and have that also translated into movement. That was like the images that you're able to draw
yeah.
out of the movement, out of the movement, for the music, out of the text, and out of the choices that Alana made as a director
yeah.
was like so fun.
Yeah, awesome. It's cool. It was all sharp.
Great.
Oh, yeah.
Well, thank you so much, everyone.
Thank you for this opportunity.
This
yeah.
has been great.
We're having a moment.
Carl and Nick hugging over here.
Yeah, it's a sweet moment.
Hermia, would you like to say anything?
A bark? No. I don't have a director. It's a dog named after a Shakespeare character.
We have a dog awesome. Here, for those of you who can't
one
see
of our,
because you're
one
listening.
One of
our
friends, Billet's host, has a cat named... Well, one's named Pomona.
Mercutio?
And the other one's named Mercutio.
Oh,
but wait, yes, but it also claws you and slobbers on you, as I found out
also,
today.
Oh,
so
why
Mercutio.
Is Tybalt?
Mm? Tybalt?
He's like the
yeah.
the prince of cats.
Yeah. That's
what I was thinking
awesome.
Too.
Everyone's like Rooch.
But no one likes Tybalt.
Oh my God.
No one does though.
Tybalt. Yeah. I would love to live with Mercutio. I would let him claw my leg and slobber on me if he was named Mercutio.
Depends which Tybalt. I mean, are we getting to live with John Leguizamo? Because that would be pretty cool.
I guess so.
Oh my God.
I don't right. think you don't have anything else to
no
to
I think this has been
yeah.
great
yeah
it's
this
been
has
thanks.
Been awesome
a thanks a lot guys for doing this with us
yeah,
it's,
thanks for hanging out
it's
with
been
Kevin
a blast
yeah
yeah when we're in we're in Victoria next we'll have to do more of these
mm-hmm.
oh my God
we'll have to do
sure.
more stuff
I really
and,
hope
yeah.
so
yeah.
Definitely yeah we're probably gonna also be in the Vancouver Fringe so see you guys there
yeah,
yeah.
Vancouver
also.
Fringe
shameless plug for the music after this it's going to be up on hopefully a Bandcamp and a SoundCloud, and I'm hopefully going to have a Facebook page up. But my artist name is Tarantist, Tarantist, and we're going to put up an 8-track album hopefully by the end of September. Is kind
perfect.
Of like the goal.
Check them out. That's awesome.
Great. And then you can check out Damn Spot Theater on Facebook as well as Twitter. Are you guys anywhere else?
No, just those two.
Facebook and Twitter, Damn Spot Theater.
My Instagram
okay.
account.
@DAMN Spot Theater, right there.
That's it.
Yeah.
Damn Spot Theater.
I might have thought like Hoover Dam.
Yeah, you never know, you know.
Yeah.
So there it is. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. Make sure that you can, if you don't know, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Please do that. And we'll be putting out more podcasts as we go along. I'd like Brooke Ballum to give us a little outro. You're usually the man of the hour.
All right, remember, until next time, well, until the continuation of the podcast that this segment's in the middle of, practice makes perfect and Chimera makes podcasts.
Woo!